Here we go. Sorry, TJ. I'm plugging in. There we go. Got a room full of people. Welcome to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Show that connects you with the topics and issues and people that are important to you. And today we're having a continuing conversation that we started a couple weeks ago with Aspen Point. Kelly Helderman is here. She's a licensed professional counselor with Aspen Point. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in. From the Colorado Springs Police Department, Sergeant Jennifer Lewis. She is the supervisor for the police side of the community outreach team.
Correct.
And that's what it's called, the community outreach team.
Actually, community response team.
Response team. Thank you. We'll define that. And thank you for coming, Sergeant. And Sergeant Eric Frederick, who is here. Good morning, Sergeant.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
And Sergeant Frederick, we're going to talk about what you do as well. You help train officers to recognize situations and de-escalate situations.
Right.
That when people are in crisis.
Correct.
So it's a big conversation. We had to carry this conversation over from last time when Heather was here from Aspen Point. And we were talking about poor kids in school, the threats that keep coming in, the impact that has on them, families, what parents can do. And just to really recap, really quickly recap, Kelly, basically it was parents need to become involved.
Correct. Correct.
And lean in more with their kids.
Right.
And talk with their kids. And if kids do not feel safe talking or want to talk with their parents, find out who they want to talk to. Is that correct?
Correct. And being very proactive and kind of talking about those situations before they arise.
And it's, I mean, again, you have to be proactive in these situations. And the one thing we did learn last week is the number of threats, you guys, that come in that we don't even know about, right? Police investigate, and then it's found out it's not an accurate, a real threat, but it happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yep.
Which is really scary.
It's an ongoing issue, and it seems like it's kind of worsening at this moment.
Yeah.
As far as just the several threats that are kind of going on in the school systems.
So, and if they want more information, though, they can reach out to Aspen Point and find out tips and everything like that to talk with their kids.
Correct. Correct.
Now, the one thing we wanted to move to last time, which we ran out of time to, was talk about when someone actually becomes the threat.
Mm-hmm.
When someone may be in, say, emotional or mental crisis, or they become a threat to themselves or others. And we did not have the chance to talk about that last time. And that's why everybody is here today.
Uh-huh.
So glad everybody is here. So let's start with maybe, Kelly, some signs to watch out. Now, this may be a juvenile.
Right.
This may be adults. I mean, there people can go into crisis for multiple of reasons.
Absolutely. So, I mean, really what you're looking for is you're looking for change in behaviors. You're looking for changes in their everyday, how they respond every day to certain situations. You're looking at whether they're isolating, whether they're withdrawing from their family, or they're trying to kind of figure out maybe some outlets or trying to kind of escape into television, games, that kind of stuff. That's more specific for the adolescents.
Okay.
But just really the biggest thing is checking on if you see changes in behaviors and withdrawal. That's the biggest thing.
So withdraw from everything, from friends,
correct,
from family, normal, daily.
Yep. And typically what we see is the withdrawal from family.
Oh,
okay. The biggest thing. Where they're sitting in their room a lot more than they typically do, or they're kind of trying to kind of escape the realities of life.
Okay.
So that's the biggest thing too. And then also one thing that we've noticed a lot more is change in academic ability. So a lot of times, you know, kiddos that are straight A students or something like that, all of a sudden they're kind of failing all their classes. They're not really engaged in any of those academic abilities. And so all of a sudden they've kind of changed. That would be the change in behavior, but more specific to the academic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then adults, I'm assuming it would be, say, change in working behaviors.
Correct.
Not connecting with coworkers anymore.
Correct.
Isolating in that sense.
And you see a lot more agitation, irritability.
Okay.
And the adults, kiddos and adults, but more specific, that's what you're really noticing is the agitation, irritability, mood lability, where it's just a constant mood swings, that kind of thing, pushing people away that are close to them, that kind of thing.
So it's a pretty noticeable shift, isn't it?
Correct.
In behavior.
Typically, I mean, obviously there's a spectrum there too. And so sometimes it's a little bit more drastic than other times. So it really just depends on kind of the person. But I mean, any kind of changes is a cause for concern.
And when you start seeing someone that may have this change in behavior, mm-hmm, and there is a increase in concern for, mm-hmm, their well-being.
Correct.
What is the best thing to do? Is the best thing to approach that individual yourself?
depending on your relationship with them. I think that's the biggest thing. If you have a rapport with them, you can definitely approach them and kind of talk about what's going on. And as we all know, kind of they're not always willing to talk about what's going on for them. So we have a lot of different resources in the community that we can actually access. We have our crisis walk-in centers. We have two locations here in the Springs that anyone can walk into 24/7. And kind of chat about what's going on for them. It could be just, I'm really anxious about school, or I'm really kind of struggling with suicidal thoughts or anything like that. It's a wide array of needs there.
Okay.
And then we also have outpatient clinics as well through Aspen Point. And, you know, there's just so many different resources that I think folks aren't aware of. And I think that's one thing that maybe people need to be aware of so that they have those access to resources.
Now, is there a stigma that you guys, and you guys can all answer this. Do you think there's a stigma if someone is in crisis? I mean, a lot of time with mental health stuff, people think there's a stigma and it's like, I can't say if I'm in crisis. I don't want to tell somebody if I'm in crisis or I need help. Do you think that can play into this greatly?
Yep. I think stigma, it is decreasing as far as the stigma with mental health, but I think there's still that old, kind of the old school belief that we don't talk about stuff like that. We don't talk about our mental health issues. If we're struggling, we just kind of buck up and take care of it. And, you know, that's not necessarily the facts anymore. You know, we have to kind of reach out and find those resources.
Well, and I would say, and we're going to move into this next, but Lieutenant Lewis, this is where the community team comes in with the police department, because how many calls were actually coming in where you realize it was because somebody was in crisis and they needed help?
Taking a look at some of our past statistics, it's anywhere between 25 and 30 calls a week that were an underlying psychiatric issue. And so the need is definitely out there. And the other thing, going back to the stigmatism of mental health, I agree. It's becoming more acceptable, but it's kind of taking a look at a person. If somebody's broken an arm, you can see that
the arm is broken, right?
The arm's broken. But if something's just not clicking in the brain, a lot of people have a hard time trying to articulate that and get that help and where to go. And with the community response team, the great thing is that they're not going to have to go through 12 different people and tell their story. The team comes together and they get them to where they need to go to best serve them and not sit in an emergency room for 6 to 8 hours where they just no contact and the anxiety continues to build for them.
So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, the community response team, obviously it was developed because of a need, and training officers to help respond to these folks in crisis and helping them and helping de-escalate, and how, Kelly, like Aspen Point and CSPD works together with the community response team. Mm-hmm. And we'll have more on that when we come back on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. We're continuing our conversation this morning about threats in the community. First, it was the threats that were coming into schools and how our students deal with those threats, parents helping their kids deal with those threats. And then we've kind of moved into the conversation of when an individual becomes a threat to themselves or others, or that individual is in crisis. And joining us this morning from Aspen Point is Kelly Helderman. She is a licensed professional counselor with Aspen Point, and you do help folks in crisis.
Correct.
That is your specialty.
I work in the crisis department.
Yes.
Yep.
And joining us from the Colorado Springs Police Department. And the reason why they're both here is because they work hand in hand. Sergeant Eric Frederick with the Colorado Springs Police Department. Sergeant Frederick handles training, helping officers get ready, right?
And correct.
To learn how to de-escalate situations, correct?
Right. So I'm in charge of the Crisis Intervention Training Program, which is a 40-hour training program that was developed back in Memphis, Tennessee, back in the early 2000s. We've adopted it here in 2004, and right now we're trying to put on 2 to 4 classes per year of 30 officers so that they can get this needed training.
Because they can go on a call, correct? And obviously somebody could be in crisis. It could be a very difficult situation, and those officers need to know quickly how to try and de-escalate the situation and get that person help.
Correct. So we basically, it's 40 hours, as I said. A lot of background information. We have doctors come in and talk about the different mental issues that could be appearing. And then we have about 6 hours of how to actually talk to somebody to de-escalate.
Okay.
What's important to them, how to build rapport, to gain some compliance voluntarily so we don't have to end up using force on people. We can actually talk them down and then get them to a point where they're rational and they can make some good decisions and decide to go in for themselves to get some help.
Well, and I think what you said, Sergeant Frederick, is critical, because haven't we learned in throughout history, and not just with our multiple departments across the country, where that person was in crisis and they needed that intervention, that de-escalation to help figure out the situation.
Right. And it's been handled in a lot of places, it's handled great. But the ones that make the news is where it wasn't handled nicely.
And that's why this training is critical.
Right. So the chief wants every single officer on the street to go through this training.
And can you give us an idea of, like you said, so some of it is evaluating the situation? Because, of course, you know that an officer is going to immediately know this is a criminal situation. This is not someone in crisis. But is it always apparent when someone is in crisis?
No. We have to go in there and evaluate, like you said,
right,
what's going on. Is somebody having a mental breakdown, or are they having a crisis issue? It could be something as... for adult or for kids, as we said, you know, their grades are slipping and their parents put so much pressure on them that they go into crisis mode. So are they really a threat to the community, or a threat to themselves, a threat to the family? And so we go in there, try to find out the root issue, and then point them in the appropriate response. And then a lot of times we'll get the community response team involved.
Okay.
Because they can then relate them further.
And that's where this is really critical, isn't it, Kelly, that the officers have that training that Sergeant Frederick is doing, to know that, okay, this is this situation, we need to get them the right help.
Correct. And we've been very fortunate to have the partnership of the law enforcement and the PD, or the FD as well, just because we do collaborate so much. We're working hand in hand all the time and kind of getting these folks the help they need.
Now, Sergeant Frederick, is that a continuing kind of training for officers? I mean, or is it kind of, here's your the week-long training in response, in de-escalating, and then they move out, and then they're prepared?
Right now, it's 40 hours, and then they're done. So we typically like to get officers who have 5 years plus on, because
okay,
that way they know how to relate to people in general, and then we just fine-tune them, telling them about active listening skills and how to build the rapport with people so that they can trust you. We want to get to the people that we're dealing with, that they're people. They're not problems.
Right.
There are people with some problems that we can help solve, but they're not the problem. So our whole goal is to treat people as people, treat them with dignity and respect, and get them the help that they need, even if they don't know that they need that help at this time.
Well, and that's just isn't it? I mean, if someone in any of you can respond, but if somebody's in crisis, they really may not know they're in crisis, in need of immediate help.
Right, and that's why we de-escalate them and get them to the point where we let them vent, we let them talk, we let them explain the issues, and then when they feel that they've been heard, it's like a catharsis. Everybody,
is it
they
really?
Just kind of, somebody gets it, and the police actually want to help. Mm-hmm. And so now they say, okay, so what can I do? And then we can get into the rational problem solving and help them find the right direction.
And that's when the community response team comes in. And you guys, I'm sorry, we have to take a news break. I just want to keep talking.
Right.
There's so much to cover with this, isn't there?
Yeah.
But we're going to have more when we come back on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today we're talking about if someone is a threat to themselves or their community, people around them, and the community response team of the Colorado Springs Police Department in Aspen Point. Joining us today, Kelly Helderman from Aspen Point. She's a licensed professional counselor. She does specialize in crisis situations at Aspen Point. From the Colorado Springs Police Department, Sergeant Eric Frederick is here. Also, Sergeant Jennifer Lewis, who supervises the police side of the community response team. And it's very interesting, Sergeant Lewis, there's two community response teams at Colorado Springs. And let's first lay out for everybody what a community response team includes. It's a police officer.
It's a police officer. It's a fire medic, a CSFD medic. And then also an Aspen Point social worker.
So one of the clinicians comes and is a part of this team. And as we were talking in the break, Sergeant Lewis, it was interesting as you were finding, like, okay, so someone was in crisis, someone was threatening themselves or others, and the fire department was going out, but then it was realizing that the call was coming back to police, and police ended up handling a lot of it. Is that right?
That is correct. When a call comes in through 911, it's decided of whether it's going to be queued up as a medical or law enforcement. But when somebody's calling in, it's usually, you know, I'm going to hurt myself, I have a gun, I have a knife, or whatever. So we wouldn't necessarily send a fire truck out there to deal with somebody who has a weapon. So we were finding more of the psychiatric calls were actually coming through the law enforcement side.
Really?
Piece. So once we realized that, and then we got with the fire department, we realized there was a significant need to address this situation. There was just too many calls for service, and units and fire trucks were being taken out of service for an extended period of time, just dealing with a person in crisis.
And there's two community response teams right now.
That is correct.
And Kelly, you do backup sometimes for the community response teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if a call comes in and somebody needs the community response team, like you said, so the officer is there to help de-escalate, correct?
Yes.
And then the fire department is there for medical reasons? Mm-hmm. And that, or does the clinician de-escalate?
It's kind of a team effort.
Okay.
A lot of times, you know, we kind of tag team that client.
But clearly that individual is obviously in crisis.
Correct.
And the biggest thing is that trying to get that person care.
Mm-hmm. That's the main goal. And with that being said, we're also trying to make sure that, you know, we're not overloading the emergency room. We're getting that person immediate care and get them to place where they need to be so their needs are met quickly. And that might mean just staying there and talking to the person, their family members, and giving them resources and keeping them at home. Or it could be transporting them to the crisis stabilization unit at Aspen Point. It's just one of these things. We actually have a very high military population, so we work very well with the VA here in town to get the veterans the help they may need. There's just so many resources that we were missing when we weren't using this partnership. And
the need is there, though. There's a third, trying to put together a third community response team, isn't there?
That is correct. We have the two units work day shift right now. They only overlap one day a week, so we run 10-hour shifts 7 days a week. But then we started realizing that we needed another rig for later in the evening. So that one, CRT-3, will be coming up hopefully in May, and that will run from 2 o'clock in the evening to almost midnight.
And that's when we were talking about this, Sergeant Frederick, as well, if you want to hop in here, because there's only two CRT teams, right? And sometimes they overlap. Clearly, there are calls that come in that the response team cannot get to.
Correct. On our call radios, we're always hearing for, is CRT available? Because the demand is so high. There's so many people out there in crisis that need the help of professionals. There's just not enough of the resource of the community response teams, hence the third unit. But a lot of times we'll have to show up and delay them, unfortunately, until the community response team gets available, or then we can call them on the phone and say, hey, we've got XYZ, what do you recommend? And we can tell them to go to Aspen Point, the walk-in center, or we can take them to the hospital, or we can try to get other resources there.
Well, and that's where your training comes in for these officers, is absolutely critical.
Right, for the crisis intervention training, right.
Yeah, because if the CRT cannot get there, help de-escalate and get that person help.
Right, because there's only two teams, whereas we have, you know, 100 officers out there or so at a time in the field. So we field, we're like the first triage, and then we ask for a crisis response if it's appropriate for them to handle.
Well, and Sergeant Lewis and Kelly, when do you know? I mean, clearly somebody is in crisis, but there's levels of care that need to be given to that person, right? When do you know when that individual, I mean, I'm sure it could be in some situations very obvious, they need immediate help, they need to be taken to a care facility, something like that. How does that process work when you're called out on these community response teams?
I think a lot of it has to do with getting some kind of collaboration from the family, from the people around, to kind of find out what's going on. Talk, obviously, to the client themselves and be like, okay, what's going on? And kind of assess, like, the just critical thinking skills, you know, making sure.
If they're lacking that?
Well, I mean, if we need to use that critical thinking skills to be able to kind of, develop kind of a good plan for them. So a lot of times what that looks like is that if they are stating that they're a threat to themselves or others, plan, intent, means, kind of all of that stuff. If we feel like they need to go somewhere, typically on the CRT, we can actually issue an M1 hold,
And now, what is an M1 hold?
So an M1 hold is an involuntary 72-hour hold, which means that regardless if they want to go or not, this is an involuntary commitment to get them some help. As we know, a lot of people in crisis situations, they're not really able to identify that they need help. So sometimes we need to be able to kind of get them that help.
Okay, and then is there a hold? So the M1 hold is the first 72-hour hold just to try and get them that immediate care.
Correct. And, you know, one thing that I think people kind of struggle to understand, too, is that we can't just take someone's rights away because they're saying or doing certain things. There's a lot of different critical thinking components that go into looking at a person to see if they are actually a danger to themselves or others.
And is there a hold beyond that M1 hold? That's what that's called?
So if we are doing an M1 hold, that's all we have on the crisis side. That's all we have availability to do. So if they go inpatient to any of the inpatient care organizations, they can extend that into an M8, which is a short-term certification. Or they can stay there voluntarily if they need to be there longer. So, I mean, that, you know, on the front end, yes, that's all we have is the M1 hold. When they get into the inpatient care, they can actually extend that if they feel like they still need some more services and more intensive services.
But if does the family have any decision after that hold comes? If this individual is a threat to themselves or others... Does the family have say after that first initial hold?
Correct. They are involved in the family sessions. They're involved in the treatment planning. They're involved kind of throughout that whole process to kind of come up with a good plan and make sure they feel comfortable with them going home as well.
Well, and really quick, Sergeant Lewis, the amount of calls that is happening, and that's for the third of CRT coming out, average, how much does one team average a week? I mean, that's how critical this is to the community, isn't it?
For the week, usually around 40 to 50 calls. Now those are calls that they actually go out to, but they're getting calls on their phone, and there are other avenues. So I couldn't even imagine, but I'd say about 40 to 50
that the CRTs are actually going to each unit.
Correct.
Okay, let's take a quick break, you guys, and we're going to talk about when you know somebody is in threat. Say Aspen Point knows that somebody is a threat to the community. Mm-hmm. How much information can be communicated to law enforcement to help that individual? And we'll talk about that when we come back on the Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today we're talking about if an individual might be a threat to themselves or others. And we are talking with Kelly Helderman. She's a licensed professional counselor, Aspen Point. She helps those that are in crisis. She's also works with backup for the community response team with the Colorado Springs Police Department, Fire Department, and Aspen Point. Sergeant Jennifer Lewis is here, who's the supervisor for the police side of the community response team. And Sergeant Eric Frederick is here. He handles training for all the Colorado Springs police officers who go out and learn how to handle folks that may be in crisis situation and help de-escalate that. And as we were talking in the break, you guys, there's so much stuff that we've tried to get through, and I know we've only scratched the surface, but the one thing we do need to talk about, sometimes you know an individual is a threat.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
By actions that person may have done. Mm-hmm. Things they may have posted on social media. There's a fine line, isn't there, with what can be communicated between, say, a mental health professional knows this person is a threat, other people know. Can you communicate that information to the police department?
We can. It's on an as-needed basis.
Okay.
So we share as much information as needed to get that, you know, that client the help they need.
Okay.
So it's not that we will divulge the whole story. It'll be like, okay, what is needed for them to be able to be involved in this?
Okay.
And for them to kind of help out and get the client help.
And those things that are needed would be an immediate threat to another person.
So it has to be an immediate threat.
Right. So HIPAA does protect a lot of stuff. Uh-huh. But whenever somebody's life is in danger, it doesn't matter whose life, that information can be shared with the police department or fire department.
And that's considered the duty to warn. You have to warn the other party if there's a threat.
Because I know, and we've all seen this in past cases where there was a question, like that person clearly was not mentally healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it appeared that they were a threat to themselves or others, but it seemed like there was no intervention. And I'm sure a lot of folks, that's a concern for folks.
Right. And there's different degrees of a threat, you know, and typically it's the most severe ones are the ones we're hospitalizing. I mean, there are a lot of several different concerns of people that are kind of struggling. But at the same time, we can't just lock them all up or put them in an inpatient facility because they are saying or doing things that are concerning. We try to treat them on an outpatient basis and use least invasive services.
But again, it has to be an immediate threat.
Correct.
And then that information can be released.
Correct.
So let's move to the immediate threat to themselves or others. Let's talk about ways. First, let's start with students. So maybe a student feels another student or a classmate might be in crisis or needs some help. What is the best way for a student or a family member of a student to reach out and get help?
There's several different ways. One of the easiest ways is to reach out. Most of the schools here in town have a school resource officer. They're a great point of contact. They've been through the crisis intervention training. They know these kids. They're with them all the time. And so reach out to the school resource officer. You also have the crisis line. You can use 911 if there's an immediate threat. There's also, I forget now, it's the crisis text.
Yeah, the Colorado Mental Health Hotline has a text option now as well, where you can actually text them if you're really kind of struggling. And if and it could be like, I noticed that my friend is doing this, that, the other. A lot of that stuff can kind of, it gets kind of vented out, and they will have someone kind of approach that situation and figure out if there is a credible threat or not.
And that's just it. How many of calls may come in where it's like, is that a credible threat?
Correct.
Is this person really in crisis right now?
And that's a tough job to kind of weed that out, and that's where that, everyone's individual critical thinking skills kind of come in hand and kind of figure out what can be done, what kind of services can we put in place to kind of help them through that without necessarily going straight to hospitalization or something like that. So, that kind of is one of the hard parts as well.
Well, and the biggest thing is to tell somebody. I mean, nobody out there in the field as an expert. There's a lot of people that do have the specialized training. So tell somebody, get them to us, either the PD, the FD, Aspen Point, a mental health professional, and then we can make that assessment. That's what we've been trained to do.
Right.
But if you don't tell somebody, there's nothing that anybody can do. So speak up and tell somebody.
Right. And that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Is I guess it's better to say, I'm a concern for this person.
Correct.
Then not say anything at all.
Correct. And I think a lot of times parents coming in and saying, I'm concerned about this, school counselor coming in, other students coming in, or even like aunt, uncle, just letting us know and kind of bringing them to our knowledge. That way we can kind of best help them.
And Safe to Tell, let's talk about Safe to Tell really quick, you guys, the Safe to Tell app, and then we're going to have to wrap it up for the day. I know it goes quickly. You hear some say Safe to Tell is not good. It does not help. But in actuality, it has saved lives, hasn't it, the Safe to Tell app? It's a great way to report concerns or, somebody in crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually been very beneficial. And I think, especially with kids, they don't want to feel like they're narking or tattling on their friends. And so, the anonymity's there. We get the information pretty quickly, and we can go out and assess the situation without betraying somebody's trust in that situation. Mm-hmm. So
if say a student is feeling they really need to report something, it's a great option.
Right, and I've actually reached out to kiddos on a Safe to Tell tip, and a lot of it is just us approaching them at their home, their school, and being like, okay, tell me what's going on with this, and kind of giving them that moment to kind of process what's going on. And then that's helping us determine if it's credible or not. It could be something where they were just venting and were upset or not, So that's where, that assistance is there. It's just kind of making sure that we are aware of all the stuff going on in that school.
Well, you guys, we're going to have to wrap up. I truly appreciate, thank you guys so much for coming in. And really quick, let's give information if people need the crisis hotline, crisis centers, that kind of information if they need help or know somebody that needs help.
We have two crisis walk-in centers. They're at 115 South Parkside Drive. That's over by Memorial Park kind of area, Parkside Printers Parkway. We also have one up at the North Care Building right next to St. Francis Medical Center, and that's at 6071 East Woodman Road, Suite 135. And we also have, aspenpoint.org /crisis to get some more additional information. We also have the Colorado Mental Health Hotline, which is 1-844-493-8255. And you can also text TALK to 38255 as well. A lot of different resources for y'all.
Yeah, you don't have to be alone in this.
No,
the basic
absolutely.
Thing, right?
Absolutely.
I cannot tell you guys how much I appreciate you coming in. Yeah. Kelly Hilderman, licensed professional counselor at Aspen Point. Sergeant Jennifer Lewis, Colorado Springs Police Department. Sergeant Eric Frederick, Colorado Springs Police Department. Thank you guys
much.
Thank
I truly
you.
Appreciate I know we just scratched the tip of it, but hey, it's the start of the conversation, right?
Absolutely.
Coming up tomorrow on The Extra, the BBB will join us. That's on KRDO News Radio.